I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
What's the matter, Mr. Lang? Tell me, I won't bite.
I sometimes feel I'm the only one who knows what's going on over there. And you all wander around ironing clothes and cleaning boots and choosing what's for dinner, while over the channel, men are killed and maimed, blown to pieces.
We know more than you think. The war hasn't left us alone, it hasn't left me alone, however it may look.
Have you any idea how scared they are? How scared they all are?
We're back again with Lady Carnarvon, author of the book Lady Almina and the Real Downton Abbey, on location at Highclere Castle in Hampshire, England, right here on the TV Time Machine.
Alfred Rothschild. Tell us about
Alfred de Rothschild was Almina's father.
Yes.
Nominally, she was born Almina Womwell, but her parents had separated, in fact, because the Womwell nominal father was an inveterate gambler and drunkard and had ended up in prison, actually. And her mother had fallen in love with Alfred de Rothschild and he with her. But it was obviously an unusual relationship. So Almina was actually illegitimate. And her father, Alfred de Rothschild, the Womwell, her nominal father, had actually died, which was quite lucky in a sense and easier. So Alfred de Rothschild could adore her and look after her. And he was very fond of her mother, who had a house in Bruton Street in Mayfair. Alfred de Rothschild, the Rothschilds were bankers in London, bankers to the British government, bankers therefore to the world, phenomenally wealthy. Think of, Bill Gates and Paul Allen rolled into London and having a jolly good life and spending it at the rate of knots. I don't really know how to compare it. And certainly on good works, but also on throwing jolly good parties and collecting art. Alfred was the middle of three Rothschild brothers, and they ran the Rothschild Bank in London. Very bright man, director of the Bank of England for 25 years. But the only director of the Bank of England to go to every conference with a minimum of four valets in tow. Very interested in the best food. He was the most extraordinary host, where to go to stay with him, you were given presents before you arrived. Cars were sent to collect you from the railway station, spare cars in case they broke down, fruit from his greenhouses thrust onto your knee as you arrived. And he had his own orchestra at his house in the country in Buckinghamshire, which he used to conduct with a diamond-encrusted baton. And all the men who played in the orchestra all had to have the same little moustaches. They all looked identical, the same hairstyle. So everything was done just to look perfect. But this man obviously was pretty smart. And he and his brothers ran the bank until his death in 1918. And he left most of his fortune to his beloved daughter Almina, something to his son-in-law, the 5th Earl of Carnarvon, and to his grandchildren, who became the 6th Earl of Carnarvon, and his sister, Lady Evelyn Herbert. So, theoretically, it's the first Rothschild to leave his fortune not to a Rothschild, but obviously it was to a Rothschild. So they're not in the genealogical tales of the Rothschild, but everybody knows who they are. So it was really interesting, and I so enjoyed exploring the relationship. And
well, he seemed to have such a sweet relationship with Almina, incredibly generous, would give her anything that she asked for, and quite cheerfully.
Very much so. But yeah, he said, you know, when she asked him for £25,000 in 1914, just to set up the hospital here, and I think she'd spent it inside 2 weeks. And he did say, and that's a lot of money then, a footman would be paid £20 a year, 20. So this was phenomenal. And, you know, she then went back and he sort of said, oh dear Puskins, that was quite extravagant, but it's a good course, here's another 10,000. You know, I think, my goodness. But equally well, Almina wasn't spending it on, you know, sillinesses. It was on saving people's lives. Wow. So if you're going to spend money, there's no better way to spend it. And he appreciated that too. So it was interesting. I mean, she replumbed this house and rewired it. She put in electricity for the first time. So I'm now dealing with some of the inner structures, and you'll be glad to know, redoing the wiring and the plumbing. But she did it incredibly well. She did everything very well. And as I come along today, I hope I do things as well as I can. I don't want to do them again. So I'm always saying to the builders and the plumbers, okay, 80 years, this has to last a good 80 years. I'm not coming back here again.
And we need Wi-Fi.
No, well, there isn't any Wi-Fi here, I can tell you that. Okay. I'm going to put Wi-Fi in the coach house with all the Downton Abbey memorabilia where you were sitting.
Okay.
So that is going to have Wi-Fi and broadband. I can't get it through the walls, and I think it's fine not to have it in the building.
Well, the unfortunate thing about Alfred Rothschild was what happened at the end, because he had such split loyalties and the war really tore him apart. Tell us about that, how that affected him.
Well, Alfred and his brothers, their cousins lived in Frankfurt in Paris, so they were very European in a way that many English people would count England as England and Europe as over the water. So these men were truly European and worked so hard to try to pull together the countries they loved as this whole world fell off the precipice into the First World War, and to try to minimise it, do everything they could to stop that precipice coming up. I'm sure nobody could have, but they were then obviously split on different sides. Those in France, destroyed by the devastation that went on in France, those in Germany fighting those in England. And it was completely devastating, and his world was undoubtedly completely destroyed, and symbolised by the fact that he offered all the trees on his estate at Holton to be used for pit props in the First World War. So in a sense it was a very obvious decimation of his world, and he ended up leaving his house to another relation. Then it became used permanently by the RAF. So it went. It's no longer in private use, and again, it's for a good cause.
Yes.
And his picture collection was split up and used by Almina to fund further hospitals and to pay death duties. So his picture collection, which was one of the best in London at the time, which is saying something, much of it was sold in 1925. And I look at the list of what was sold and I want to cry.
Yes.
But equally well, I'm enormously grateful, because without that, you know, we'd have lost more things here.
Sure.
And things from here were sold. But he had top of the list was a Leonardo da Vinci, for example. Boucher, Fragonard, they were superb works of art. We can't have them back, but I'm so grateful for the Rothschild legacy. And it was, again, very moving and fantastic to write about that, to bring it out, and to sort of join it together. And I didn't really find many bad stories. I know you have to have good and bad, don't you? But in the end, it was extraordinary how much positivity you managed to come out with from a very difficult time.
Where can people find out more about the castle and your book, Lady Almina, and The Real Downton Abbey?
Well, our website's quite a good place to start. The Real Downton Abbey, Lady Almina, The Real Downton Abbey, has been published by Random House in the States. So that's Amazon. This is a pretty good place to get it.
Yes, indeed.
And we sell it off the website here as well. But for America, there's no point paying silly postage.
It's true.
And when visitors come here, it sells very well in our gift shop, which is a huge help, again, to the castle, funnily enough. So I sign all the copies here, so I'm quite busy signing. I retire to the gift shop to sign with a cup of tea another few hundred books, which takes a while. But I'm not going to... Some of the visitors say, does she stamp them? But that's not fair either. If people are kind enough to buy it and read it, I can sign it.
Lady Carnarvon, as you reflect upon Lady Almina, Highclere Castle, and your experience writing this book, what are your thoughts?
I am so glad that Downton Abbey gave me the chance to write about Lady Almina. I feel very lucky about that. I think it's wonderful that Geordie had such an extraordinary great-grandmother with so much energy, as well as a great-grandfather who discovered Tutankhamun's tomb. So as a couple trying to make this castle sustainable and relevant in today's world for our stewardship, I think we're rather lucky.
Lady Carnarvon, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine. Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past.
Jim, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Jim Benson. Join us again next time as our magical transport takes us on yet another journey exploring television's past, present, and future. You'll find your next adventure right here on the TV Time Machine.